Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Again, appreciation to Sean and Seth. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne of Payne and Pendergast. I don't know if you knew.
How'd they come up with that name?
That's how it came together, is that they put the names together. But no, thank you to them being our eyes and ears as the Texans are in West Virginia. Of course, you'll hear them again. Oh, my goodness. My dumb self forgot the time. You'll hear Sean at 3:40.
Yeah, and then Seth at 5:20.
At 5:20. And then you'll hear them again 7:45 with Area 45. Mm-hmm. Actually, it might be both of them. It might be Sean. I can't recall. But you'll get insight into your Texans all day long right here on your Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Speaking of the Texans, obviously when they were still here in Houston, we were out there watching practice and having the opportunity to talk to a number of folks, including Lake and Tomlinson. We talked to Aziz. We talked to Will. We talked to Matt Burke. And we talked to Nick Caley. And something that Nick Caley said has stuck with you to this point.
Yeah.
I mean, what is this, 4 or 5 days later?
Yeah, when we talked to him, was it Thursday or Friday?
Friday.
Friday.
Yes, sir.
You ever had something just fester?
Yes. Wait, hold on. I don't like the way that sounded. No, if you're using the word fester.
Not like
yes,
a boil.
Yes, if I just like kind of stick. But that's, is that not what you think of when you hear the word fester?
A festering boil.
That or Uncle Fester. Like there ain't yeah, but a couple of things Uncle you think fester. Of. Yeah.
I'm talking like emotionally, you know.
Nah, my emotions don't fester, bro.
Maybe just sort of, you know, bothers you.
There, that happens.
Yeah.
I agree to that.
So you didn't have a festering boil over the weekend.
No.
Something festered with me this weekend.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And it continues to do so to this day. So we're sitting there minding our own business. Actually, we're not minding our own business. We're talking about Texans business with Nick Caley. And I just in passing said, well, I know you've called plays before, like from preseason games or whatever. And he said, nope.
That is correct.
And I said, what? And so even with Sean McVay, some of his other stops, you know, whatever, he said he has never called a play in a game.
Correct.
Preseason or otherwise. Now, just so people who don't know, most head coaches, most offensive coordinators delegate at least a preseason game or a half of a preseason game or something like that for an assistant coach to get those reps. So actually, I know it happened. I know for a fact it happened last year.
Yeah, I wouldn't say most. It feels like that's been kind of a newer occurrence.
Well, maybe
over the
most
last
recently. Yeah.
Few,
yeah.
Maybe like, let's say, half decade where we've seen some coaches realize that, hey, there might be an instance where you're unavailable, whatever, where you might need someone else to call play. So you want to give, or just the opportunity to give people some experience. And for a play caller, especially if it's like a head coach or even an offensive coordinator, gives you an opportunity to have a different vantage point of your team for that given game or period.
Yeah, I've heard college head coaches and coordinators give some of their assistants a half or a quarter or whatever. And certainly in the preseason, they often give quarterbacks coach, you know, tight ends coach, whomever, a half of a preseason. And he said, nope. And I just can't let that go.
No.
I just cannot let that go.
I kind of thought that was the case, but I was in the same boat. Mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of find out going into that interview. But it kind of makes sense to some degree. Mm-hmm. Like, Sean McVay is very hands-on as a head coach, and, like, he has that feel. Like, he has that perspective of there. Now, there's been deep dives. I think Kalen Kaler, or it might have been Jordan Rodrigue, actually, who covers the Rams for The Athletic, who has done a deep dive into like the way that Sean McVay works. And it's a very collaborative effort in, you know, making sure that a lot of guys get say. But when you have a team that's been as good as the Rams have of late, and for a guy who is so integral to the offense as Sean McVay, I could actually see it to where maybe he does not have as many people, you know, actually calling plays because he wants to have that, you know, that dynamic over top of it. But still, it was kind of, I don't want to say shocking because it makes sense.
It set me back a little bit.
I was hoping that maybe you were right in that regard, to kind of be like, hey, at some point he's done a little bit of that. Because that's, again, another part of the learning curve that he has for this year that he's going to need to get to. And it's, when I say the learning curve, it's not just him figuring things out. Mm-hmm. They've set this up also to be difficult for themselves.
Sure.
I think we should acknowledge that, right? They have set this up by having the turnover on the offensive line and not having as much talent on the offensive line where you can lean on talent at some times. They are going to need this team to be cohesive in order to be good, as opposed to just be good off of the strength of the pure talent.
Right.
That is making this a little bit difficult. The way that they want to go about offense, why I think in the end it'll be good for them to have, you know, a level of multiplicity and go in a lot of different places. But the idea that, hey, we're just going to have a whole bunch of stuff available to us and we're going to find what works for us, that takes time. There are a lot of things that they're trying to put into place and figure out and, you know, do the puzzle pieces on mm-hmm. as they go. And in addition to Nick Caley figuring out the offensive offensive coordinator play caller role in and of itself as well.
Well, and there's a reason that I just can't let that go, because, you know, everything that you just said, of course, but also when he steps on the field and the offense takes the field on Saturday against the Vikings, that's going to be the first play call he's ever made in an NFL game. On top of that, you have the first time ever that Cole Popovich has been the offensive line coach. On top of that, you have, what, three new starters on the offensive line, presumably?
I mean,
with Robinson and Ursary.
Four. Oh, well, you mean just in general, or you mean for this team?
For this team.
Titus is the only one who's slated to start.
Jared Patterson, maybe.
Oh, that's
maybe
true.
Not.
Fair enough.
You know,
apologies,
so three,
to Jared.
So three or four. New starters on. So you got new play caller, never called plays, new offensive line coach as the offensive line coach. He's coached the line before, but not as the guy designing things. You have at least three, maybe four new starters on the offensive line. You have a new offense. You have new wide receivers. The only one really returning is Nico. I mean, depending on what you think of Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson. So you have like all these new elements with the offense, and I don't know if I'm just being impatient. I'm just like, is this a recipe that you want to live with?
It's going to be the one that you have to, but I think there's room to acknowledge, and maybe depending on what your outlook is, you might be more mm-hmm. More kind in your interpretation, or you might be more harsh in your interpretation. Yeah. But this is what you have to live with. Either it means that, hey, what you see early on, give it a little bit of grace because there's definitely room to grow. Or you could look at it from like, hey, they've made this unnecessarily mm-hmm. difficult on themselves, and they've given themselves a much harder path to find success.
Yeah.
There's different ways to look at it. Fair enough from the 713, as I'm talking about, hey, there's been a trend over the last 5 years. Wasn't it Sean McVay that started that preseason trend? You are right, because it was like Kevin O'Connell, I remember.
Oh, that's right.
Was
yeah.
one of those guys that was
so
calling.
Why didn't?
That is actually very concerning, to be honest.
Maybe like, that's why I was like, just assuming. Of course you've called plays, right?
Yes.
Nope.
Because look, again, you don't have to view it this way. I'm not sure if I view it this way, but my mind immediately, mm-hmm. negativity in my brain goes to, well, why didn't Sean McVay think he was worthy
yes,
of calling plays at any point?
Exactly, because you're right. McVay has had a lot of, and maybe he was letting the offense, I don't know, you know, because he calls the plays, and he didn't allow that to happen for whatever reason. And then there's another level to this that sort of, I think, ties in with all these new faces, new players on the line, new
receivers. Damn, it's almost been a decade. It was 2017 when Sean McVay did that.
All that stuff. Do you think some of the struggles that they're having, because it's new, and it's new for the Popovich and obviously Caley and the linemen, do you think the struggles that they've had, monumental struggles for the most part, do you think that'll leave a mark?
Oh, I thought you were going to – I'm going to be honest. I thought the question that you were going to ask was, do you think some of the struggles are because of that spot? And
no,
I was going to say that I think that that's part of it.
Like confidence all of a sudden, like, hey, man, you know? Like they got destroyed in the two-minute drill yesterday.
Sure.
Three interceptions. Different quarterbacks, but three interceptions, pick six, talking trash, C.J. Gardner, you know, all this other stuff, Aziz. If I'm playing for a new offensive coordinator, a new offensive line coach, is there – I know there's a possibility – could it be that they start going,
from the player perspective, losing a level of faith in them?
I don't know about this.
No. I don't. Well, I mean, it is possible, but I don't think that they will.
They did last year.
Sure. But that was year two. Mm-hmm. I think that's worth noting. And I think also that sprung up not just from the, you know, relatively young play caller.
No, it was the
inflexibility and the inability to be malleable, especially in the face of, you know, efforts at collaboration from other minds of football, right? Other good minds of football that are bringing you ideas, not utilizing those and getting better.
Yeah.
I think that for one, we're starting from a place where people are seeing the value of Nick Caley.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, hey, he's a tight end coach and he's giving me game on being a tight end, or he's really helping me understand the foundations mm-hmm. of where he's getting to so we get to the right place, right? Whether it's those things or the very clear willingness to be a collaborator
mm-hmm.
and the ways in which I think that, in fact, we were talking about this earlier today. Sorry to go backwards. But we were talking about it when it came to Chris Droster, what he was talking about, and how he was quoted with the Washington Post on the piece about Laramie Tunsil. And how, you know, the heat that I think is there to be brought to Chris Droster is also in part because, yo, you as the offensive line coach,
mm-hmm.
the schemes and the stuff that you were doing that, yes, may have been brought down from Bobby, you guys weren't implementing it well enough to where when you guys found success, it was doing things that the players wanted, that Cole Popovich seemingly also wanted, that you did not implement and that you could not fight for to get implemented on this offense.
Mm-hmm.
Cole Popovich is going to be a guy who is involved here in, you know, using that collaboration. He's going to bring some things.
Yeah.
We talked about how Jerod Johnson, along with CJ Stroud, from that kind of quarterback perspective, mm-hmm. will be bringing things. I imagine other guys on the staff who have been here are going to be able to bring their thoughts. And Nick Caley has already demonstrated a willingness to incorporate all
that. This is true.
I think those are the things that will keep players invested, because those are the things that, conversely, the players were upset about when they saw that, hey, the offensive coordinator, the head man, isn't taking these into account.
But here's the other part. I'm really just sort of wondering, because it's human nature. Like, you have this collaboration now, right? They've never done that before. You know, Nick Caley was tight ends coach, largely, you know, run game and blocking schemes. And now you're collaborating with, you know, other offensive coaches in the passing game. Now you have the new offense, all the things that I've mentioned already. I'm just saying this team could really use a good offensive performance against the Vikings. Like, I think you say you don't think it could happen. I think it absolutely could happen. You know, these are veteran players, a lot of them. And if they see something not consistently not work, it's human nature to say, man, I don't know.
No, that's fair.
I don't know.
I think, to be completely clear on my answer, not that it can't happen. That would be absurd for me to take away all the possibilities on the table. I think it's not likely to happen,
right,
is my stance.
Right.
For all the reasons that we just talked about. But it is an interesting thought to bring up,
mm-hmm.
Is, you know, what does that inexperience come to, especially with, again, the very steep, plateau that they're hoping to reach.
Yeah.
They've set it up for themselves that it's not going to be easy. Now, of course, they're taking that on. But you're right. Like, those things can work against you if you're constantly seeing a level of not reaching that, achieving what you want over a time period. Time will tell, and it starts on Saturday when the Texans face off against the Minnesota Vikings in preseason.
They really
game
need
one.
A good day.
I think, to some degree, but I'm also not going to hinge too much upon it.
I'm saying for their own confidence. Forget what it matters in terms of, you know, wins and losses. I think they need some validation, man.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. But I think also today they got a little bit of validation. Hey, being able to run the football, especially when you know that that's part and parcel of what you're trying to do as an offense, I think that'll be helpful. But again, this is all hopeful thinking. It shows up on the gridiron, right? That's the whole beauty of the game, is that ultimately it'll show up on the field. The yards can be tallied up. The points can be tallied up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're getting to a point where that's going to be the marker. It's no longer going to be these hypotheticals. And as you mentioned, Saturday is the first one of those. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you guys rocking with us on this Tuesday. Coming up next, about the time where we hand things over to Figgy Fig for Figgy's mixtape. What you got for us, man?
Yeah, so I went down a wild rabbit hole yesterday and ran across a story about some conjoined twins.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the system are failing them. I will explain why. Plus, if all the Seinfeld characters lived in Houston, what part of town would they live in?
Oh, good.
713-572-4610.
All right, let's do all that next.
Yes, it's the mixtape in the loop, Sports Radio 610. It's your man Figgy Fig holding it down on Tuesday.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Happy Tuesday to everyone out there. So I went down a rabbit hole yesterday. I don't know how I got to this, but I was on YouTube and ran across a video of a pair of conjoined twins,
mm-hmm.
by the name of Abby and Brittany. They might be a little popular out here.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Are they the ones that are married?
What?
One of them is married. One is married. I'll get to that in a little
bit. I saw that.
I'll get to it in a little bit.
Talk about freaky.
All right.
That's the first thing your mind
went to. We just started the segment, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah.
But I think they're being treated unfair with something. I'll get to that in a little bit. But I was kind of interested in this, to the point I really don't watch reality shows. I know there's a bunch of reality shows with stuff like this. But I was kind of interested to the point I was doing a little research, and they had a little interview, like a little Q&A. Thoughts
on what?
What you just saw?
I'm listening.
Give it a grade.
Whatever Lopez is doing, I don't want to be involved.
So they are conjoined, kind of above the shoulders.
Yeah, so they got two heads, one body, pretty much.
And one of them is married.
Yep.
Come on, man.
Look, what's wrong? What you mean, come on,
man? What you want me to say?
Okay, I want you to tell me what you think.
I don't have thoughts in this moment. I am reserving thoughts for more information on the story. And for all that information, I return it back to Figgy Pig. All
right, so they did a little Q&A, and they were asked about, are you guys good drivers?
Mm-hmm. I think we're good drivers, but we have two licenses. And when we got our driver's license, we each had to take the test. We both passed, obviously.
Okay, so they both passed the driver's test.
Are they speaking in unison there?
They are.
Sometimes.
They are. And it continues. So they asked Abby and Brittany, how the hell do you drive together?
When we drive, Abby is in control of the gas and the brakes. And then we both steer, obviously. And then I'm in charge of the clicker for the blinker. So.
I say again, come on, man.
What you mean? They living life, man.
No, I'm happy
living
for
life.
Them. I'm happy
Are
driving.
You?
I'm very, very happy for
that sounds like you putting up a defense.
But I'll go back to
what
the very first part of this. You say two above the shoulder, two heads,
yep.
One body, and yet one of them is married.
Yep.
Why do you keep going to there?
Because how is that possible?
It's possible now. I don't know. Anywho.
Yeah, continue.
Honestly, the thing that came to mind there with that is, I would hate to try and make driving a two-person job. Like, two. Like, I thought they were just being like, all right, one of us kind of just, you know. Again, I don't know how this works.
Yeah.
I would like to start by saying, I don't know how this works. I don't know if you just, like pass off control. Like, you got it. I don't know.
I feel like we have a lot of questions about this.
There are a lot of questions. Why is there not a reality show?
Way too many. I don't know.
This has reality show written all over.
Again, I think I say this often. I live my life by the thought process of don't ask questions that you don't want answers to. And there's a lot of questions that I'm like, I'm curious, but I also don't want to ask.
Yeah.
I really truly don't.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're going to give me some answers here.
Abby, Brittany, what happens when you both get cold?
We're always different. And like, even like on our stomach, if we're in a swimsuit or whatever, but we can, like, if you touch my stomach, I can be a totally different temperature than Brittany would be. It's so weird. And our hands, sometimes. Not right now, but a lot of times our hands are different temperatures, so I get super hot way faster, and there's a distinct red line all the way down, and I'm, like, legitimately, like, my legs are sweating, like, everything, like, it's awful, and she's fine. Isn't that weird?
Yes.
Oh, see, now that'd be frustrating, because we already know how frustrating it is arguing with somebody about the thermostat.
Yeah.
Now that person is kind of you?
Yeah.
Kind of?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they were also asked, what happens when one of you guys don't feel well?
Mm-hmm. If my stomach hurts, it hurts right here, and I can't feel this. Like, I can't feel anything, but my stomach hurts right there, and Brittany's stomach hurts here, and she can't feel that. Because I can only feel my right side, and I can only feel my left side, but when I have stomach aches, it hurts on the opposite side.
I was so interested by
it
this.
Is
I'm
interesting.
Like, man, if they had a reality show, I would like to... Hell, I want to interview him, to be honest.
I think it's got a reality show written all over
it. Yeah, I was kind of interested. They were actually driving, too. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
So a couple other things about them. Abby and Brittany are both working as fifth grade teachers in Minnesota. I feel like Minnesota might be the perfect place.
What's that supposed to mean?
Like,
wait,
this.
Hold on. Why did Minnesota get a sideswipe like this?
I think they will embrace somebody like that.
Oh,
because
they real nice up there.
Yeah,
they're okay.
Very homey. I don't know. Maybe Houston probably embraced that a little bit too, man. It's people nice down here in Houston too.
Yeah.
But some other things, they do live a low profile, so probably not getting a reality show anytime soon unless they get that bag.
Yeah.
And Abby, who is one half of the twin, she is married to a guy by the name of Josh Bowling, who is a nurse and a U.S. Army veteran.
That's dope. Okay.
Thank you for your service.
Shout out to Josh.
Yeah.
And this is where I feel like the system is failing them a little bit. So they both got degrees in college. Mm-hmm. They both got degrees. They had to pay for their own separate.
That's crazy.
That's crazy itself.
Yeah.
But this is the part that got me. So I mentioned they are a fifth grade teacher.
Mm-hmm.
They both got to share that same salary.
What?
So they're sharing the same salary. They had to get two degrees, but they can only work off of that one salary. That sucks, man.
That absolutely sucks.
That's not fair, man.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're like.
That's messed up, man.
Their whole existence continues to run through. There's a lot of questions I'm running through. In addition to seeing you guys' texts And by the way, don't bring me in this from the 832. We're all going to hell. Not me. I didn't do none of the stuff y'all are doing right now.
I'm asking questions.
Yeah, that is kind of like, again, I guess they're teaching one class. Is that how that goes?
Yeah, but they also, I'm sure they was in one class in college.
Did they have to get hired separately? Because if they got hired separately, they should have two salaries.
They
take separate driver's tests. One's married, one's not.
Yep.
Different degrees. And
I think they hired them as one. So they got to share
that
salary.
They're getting jacked, man.
Yeah, that's
getting jacked.
That's wrong. And then teachers already underpaid at some point, too.
Facts.
So, nah, man. They should both get their own separate salaries.
I agree.
Somebody said because the Minnesota Twins. How did I not get that joke? How did I not get the Twin Cities?
I didn't get it either.
How did I not catch that?
So, I don't. How do I put this?
Yep.
So when you get married.
You still stuck on this marriage.
You are on the worst part of this right now.
You want to know how they get busy.
Well,
do the other one just kind of close their eyes?
Because
and just...
you explain there that they have like separate torso elements, like one has an upset stomach, the other doesn't, etc.
Yeah, so they don't feel like if
they
one
feel separate.
Yeah, so she don't feel anything on her twin side.
So how does the conjugation work?
We gonna have to ask them.
Seriously, how did that work?
I'm gonna see if I could try to get them on the show.
Does you think, one feel it? And the
you think
other
I could
one
get them
does
on the show?
Why are we doing this
I'm
right now?
I'm asking questions.
I know you are.
Yeah, and look, I'm not
My problem is not that you're asking questions, that this has been the only question that you've had. This is the first place that your mind went, and then we talked about other things, and you were like, no, but I'm still here.
Let's talk about this. No, don't tell me you didn't wonder.
I really and truly didn't even get there yet. Like, I'm just
honestly, I have a million questions, man. I have a million questions. Mm-hmm. I was really intrigued by this, man. Like I said, usually I stay away from stuff like this. I don't watch my 500-pound life and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But this one, I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
If they had a show, I would definitely be tapped into this.
Mm-hmm.
But salute to Abby and Brittany.
Oh, absolutely salute. I mean,
yeah,
what an
they accomplishment. They living life, man.
Yeah.
Hell, I ain't graduate high school and they then went to college and all that stuff, man. So
Lopez is asking the right questions.
Y'all are terrible.
I don't even want to look on the text.
You shouldn't. Don't worry about it.
All right, as we continue the mixtape in the Loop Sports Radio 610. So I asked the question, if the cast from Seinfeld was living in H-Town, what part of town would they be living in? 713-572-4610. Now my inspiration from this was I saw somebody online ask ChatGPT about this show called Girlfriends. Are you familiar with the show Girlfriends?
Yeah, yeah.
With Diana Ross' daughter. I'm blanking on
Tracy
the name.
Tracy Ellis Ross,
yes.
Yeah.
She was on there. But somebody asked ChatGPT about that show and where would they live if they lived in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave a whole list. And I'm not sure how much of our audience watches Girlfriends, so I decided to kind of localize it a little bit as far as the show. You guys are a big fan of Seinfeld, so I decided to ask ChatGPT the question.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it gave me. So they gave Jerry Seinfeld will be living in the Heights.
I'm good with that. I could see that.
He said they,
but in one of the what do they call them, the higher houses,
townhouse,
little skinny little houses that I hate, because it ain't giving you no yard, no nothing.
Yeah, one of those, just
whole bunch of stairs.
Four flights, and just a skinny little yard. But it says trendy, walkable, and full of coffee houses, wine bars, little quirky restaurants. Basically, the Houston version of his Upper West Side life. Do you think that's fair?
I like that.
I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it. The only thing about it is like Jerry Seinfeld kind of doesn't like people to some degree, but also at the same time, I think you're right. Like, I think there is that level of socialite in there.
He goes to diners and coffee shops.
Yeah. And that all feels like it's the Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah. George Costanza.
Oh, Lord.
They got him living in Maryland.
Maryland.
Yeah. Maryland with his parents. Or Bel Air.
True. Oh,
that's good.
That is a good
that
answer.
That is really good.
And the answer is Maryland, not Bel Air, because I don't know if his parents were Bel Air people.
That's good.
So this is what they said. They said, George is definitely living at home again. Let's be real. He's probably in Maryland with Frank and Estelle
that's
yelling
right
at each other over kolaches.
Yes. What am I going to do with all these kolaches?
And then they said his dream scenario is he thinks he's destined for Bel Air. Mm-hmm. Clean, quiet, slightly upscale, but gets priced out every time.
Mm-hmm.
And his job status, y'all might find this funny, still lying about working for the Texans or trying to get a gig at Gallery Furniture with Mattress Mac. Is that pretty accurate?
Yes, nah, that's definitely
that's great.
Right. Wait, so how does the Steinbrenner thing work except with Cal?
With Cal. It was Cal. George, get in here.
All right, so Elaine. They got Elaine living in Montrose. Why? Because it's funky. Artistic and a little bit unpredictable. Mm-hmm. Montrose is the perfect home base for smart, career-driven women like with a rebellious streak.
That feels okay. I'm trying
I was thinking Midtown. I thought you were going to say Midtown.
Yeah, it does. She does feel a little
she
Midtown.
Goes out a lot, dates, you know.
But I mean, Montrose has that, vibe too.
Yeah. Her career move, she'll probably be an editor at a weirdly niche magazine in the museum district.
I'm good with that.
Or work in PR for a major art exhibit.
Yeah.
And then they did mention nightlife. She's sipping, Mezcal
mm-hmm.
at Anvil. I never heard of that place. Nah. Or debating feminism with Rice grad students at Agor.
Okay, all right.
Which I think Agor is a coffee shop, if I'm not mistaken. Kramer.
Oh, yeah.
East Downtown.
He's
Edo.
An Edo guy.
Yeah, Edo.
A little funky.
Yeah, so they said Kramer screams Edo, the converted loft, skate parks, art walls, and spontaneous parades are exactly his energy.
Yeah. They're nailing this.
I'm trying to think, because I don't know if I could really pinpoint Kramer as Edo, but maybe.
It's funky like him, but he always has like stuff working, like deals and friends that do this and that and can get him this and that.
Yeah, they say a typical day is rollerblading down Polk Street, crashing local pop-ups, and somehow making friends with every food truck vendor in the 10-mile radius.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. From the 281, they said Frank Costanza would actually still be living in Spring Branch yelling at the kids in the street.
All right, and the last one, Newman. Who is Newman?
Newman. Hello, Newman.
Newman is one of Kramer's friends. He also lives in the building.
The heavyset guy that comes in every once in a while.
Played by Wayne Knight. He's a postal carrier.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
They said he got to be near a major USPS hub.
Yep. That's right.
In Pasadena.
All right.
So he'd be out in Pasadena. And they said Pasadena feel like the kind of place where he'll rule his mail route.
Mm-hmm.
Secret life, he has barbecue side hustles. And wins neighborhood chili cook-offs.
That actually feels right on. That very much feels like it's on point.
A little beef. He's still beefing with Kramer, but shows up to his pop-ups for free samples.
I think ChatGPT might have got this part wrong. He's always beefing with Jerry.
Okay.
Hello, Newman.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So thoughts, scale of 1 to 10. How do you?
I think that's a 9+. Again, the only one I thought, and this was just me, I thought Elaine Bennis, Midtown, perfect. All the little clubs and restaurants and dating scene and all that stuff. But you're right. Montrose has that as well.
Yeah. What's tough is that also Houston and New York are just very different places. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that you're going to find perfect matches, but I'd probably give it a solid 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
I could see it. I could very much see some of them. And then also, it doesn't seem like it considered too much of like suburbs.
Yeah.
Where sometimes you might even fit some of these guys a little bit further into some of those places. But regardless, I think it was pretty good, and appreciate you giving us a little bit of that in Figgy's Mixtape, 1:20 p.m. every weekday right here.
You got to salute ChatGPT for this, man.
Yeah, you know. I'm not going to do that. right here on In the Loop, 1:20 p.m. every day, at the Figgy Fig on social media if you see something mixtape worthy. All right, coming up next, we get ready to hand things off to the fellas of The Drive, Clint and Ron. We'll do that next. Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you guys rocking with us here on a Tuesday, getting ready to hand things off to the fellas of The Drive. Clint, and today Luke Morrow in for Ron and Show Hughley. We'll talk to them in just a little bit. Appreciation to Sean Pendergast joining us courtesy of Flight by Yingling. And also thanks to Seth for giving us one of the most impassioned practice reports that I've ever. Like, he was so excited to tell us about Darrell Taylor. But look, we haven't talked a lot about the pass rushing for this Texans team right now, in some parts because it's a given and we kind of feel like we know.
Yeah.
There's still a really interesting like depth proposition there. Like, you can never have too many, except literally you can. Mm-hmm. Like, the literal sense of it, you can't have too many, and it'll be interesting to see how they cut it down. Especially since Darrell Taylor has been really effective, but as Seth mentioned, that's a smaller guy. Like, how is he going to hold up to that for the entirety of the season?
Apparently impressive,
and everything
though,
but yeah, he has been impressive, as it feels like the entirety of the defense has. But a good day just in general for the offense, or at least a better day, especially running the football, which has been very, very good to see. Especially like they need to just be effective. They need to be effective running the football. And it sounded like today they had an effective day running the football. Of course, you'll be able to hear from Seth and Sean with the Fellas of the Drive, I think, at various different points. I think it was 3:40 for Sean on the drive, and then 5:20 talking to Seth. So both of them lending their experience out there in West Virginia all day long, because I think also 7:45 you'll hear from Sean again. So you'll get more and more insight as to what's happening in West Virginia as the more you listen right here on Sports Radio 610. If you were listening at noon, you would have heard D'Amico Ryans talking after today. There was one thing that he mentioned that I haven't, actually a couple things that he mentioned that I haven't been able to shake. One of them I will talk about, which was his response to kind of the way that they've moved Ariante to left tackle and have Titus move out. And again, I think we mentioned it, and it doesn't feel like it really stands up to scrutiny in the way that, you know, it fits with the question that was asked of him. Like, but he's talking about how everything is an evaluation, and he moves things around on everybody and coaches and everything. And, you know, just seeing how people handle different circumstances, keeping them light on their feet, I think is the way that you characterized it. And I found that to be interesting, because I wonder, is that a new thing, or has that been something that D'Amico has been doing since? Because it takes on two different forms depending on the answer to that question. I think if it's been something that he's been doing, then I have a real question as to why you had such an inflexible offensive coordinator. However, I think the thing that might be more likely is that this is a new iteration, or this is a development for D'Amico Ryans as a head coach after having to fire one of his friends because of a lesson that he learned in that, hey, we had somebody who was real inflexible and incapable of handling the changes quickly. Remember, that was one of the things we talked about, almost like a trying to turn a cruise ship. It took so long for Bobby Slowick to react to things. This feels like it might be some level of, oh, I recognize that we need to be more nimble as a coaching staff, and I'm going to try and do things to help them do that.
I think that's a very real possibility. I also looked at it a completely different way.
Okay.
I looked at it as another, which I think is a very real possibility, not just what you said. I think he's got experience having to switch people around on the offensive line.
True.
Not by choice. You know, this guy got hurt. This guy wasn't getting it done. These two players were kind of a wash, and then Titus was right tackle, then left tackle, then guard. Same thing with Juice Scruggs. Remember last year, started out at center, and then they had injuries at center, and then they moved. So I think it could – I would lean with you. I think it's relatively new. Maybe he did it last year, but I think it's relatively new, and it's more like, hey, man, we had to do some shuffling last year. Let's get ahead of the curve a little bit and start moving guys around.
Yeah, and look, I don't think anybody has been – outwardly and largely negative about D'Amico, and I think that they you'd be hard pressed to find too much negativity about D'Amico. Yes, there's clearly things they can get better at, but I think this has been good for me, or at least I was encouraged to hear that, because again, D'Amico is still a pretty young head coach when it comes to this thing, and while he has done a pretty phenomenal job, obviously getting to the playoffs, winning playoff games, and really putting together an incredible defense, which is not inherently in his job description, but we know as a defensive coach that he has a lot of domain there. The idea that not only is he going to be good, but he's going to try and find ways to continue to make himself better is part of the place where I think you judge D'Amico Ryans, especially headed into year three in his tenure.
Yeah, and he's more experienced. Now, he probably has been exposed to these types of, you know, sort of quick thinking moves that you put on your players and your coaches just because of all the coaches he's been with. You know, go back to, you know, here with Kubiak, and then, of course, Philadelphia, and then Shanahan and everything. So I know all these coaches are very, very well prepared to probably do some of this. So he's probably been exposed to that a little bit. The thing that stood out to me on his comments on the offensive line was he touched on this at least twice about the mindset being a big factor with the offensive line. You're going to move people off the line of scrimmage if you have the right mindset. And I think that speaks to maybe some of the guys that are not – On the tentative, you know, starting depth chart or season opening depth chart. So maybe that's where Ursary has really, you know, gained some steam. He's got the right approach, the right mindset. He's a big physical guy. Titus Howard, we've talked about this, seems to be embracing that role a little bit more impressive, et cetera. Jarrett Patterson, just a hard worker that came up last year and became a starter. So I think it says as much about the guys who aren't on the necessarily on the starting five as those who are.
Yeah. On top of that, there was obviously a lot of things that he talked about that were good. You know, Kamari Lassiter talking about the energy and emotion, always dialed in. He's a spark plug for the team, which is, I mean, high praise, obviously deservedly so, but interesting nonetheless. He also kind of talked about Sting, right? And I thought this was an interesting question. Are you expecting teams to test Sting more this year? I don't want to say it specifically. I'm thinking of Key and Peele, like the Obama translator. But in my mind, I had a translation of like, I don't give a bleep where they test. And that's kind of what it felt like he said, right? If you go anywhere, you can go anywhere we want it to be, and we want it to be tough. And it is that, right? If you try and attack Sting, if you try and attack Kamari Lassiter. That got me thinking, especially since I saw this recently. There was a little bit of audio that I saw on a podcast, the Not Just Football podcast, and this is Richard Sherman, clearly very well-regarded cornerback, a very, very good cornerback in his day as well. Mm-hmm. I feel weird saying that, like he is super old, as if he wasn't playing just very, very recently. But he's well-respected, and not just as a cornerback, a player, but as a talker. And this is him talking about Derek Stingley.
Is there anybody in the league right now that you just really respect?
Pastor Tang.
Took the words out of my mouth. Pastor Tang?
But Stingley is on his heels mm-hmm. right now.
And Stingley is so smooth.
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 It's like one's a super technician, and not that Pat ain't a great athlete. He's a phenomenal athlete. He does everything. But he's like, if you teach tape and you got clinics and you want to teach people how to play DB and what it looks like to be perfection and not frazzled in the game situation, it's Sertan.
Yeah.
You want to watch just a fun corner who just out there, great technique, great feel, great athleticism, ball skills, look like a receiver.
Yeah.
You watch Sting.
See, I that's accurate as far as what we've seen anyway, but I also think Stingley doesn't get frazzled. He seems like he's one of those guys that can get behind a step and then all of a sudden still be able to make the plays. He's very even keel type person off the field that we know.
I don't know how you could be even more even keeled if you were Derek Stingley Jr.
Yeah.
No, so, I love seeing our guys continue to get love. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, just reminds you that defense is going to be a problem. In fact, I was arguing a little bit, actually having a spirited conversation with a friend of mine who kind of seems to believe that the AFC South is the most open of the AFC conferences. If there were to be a new division winner, I was trying to point to like, hey, why? No. I still don't think that there's a real good chance that one of these teams takes over. Obviously, you could look at the idea of the Jacksonville Jaguars, even though I think Liam Cohen is going to be better. That was a 4-win team last year. I don't know that they make a crazy jump to double digits this year. I'm not convinced of that just yet.
Yeah.
But more importantly, no matter how you feel about this offense, it does feel like there's still a lot of room defensively, or maybe not a lot of room just generally, but it feels like there's still room for them to be a better defense than they were last year. If no other reason than you look at Kamari Lassiter, Kalen Bullock, they started a couple of really young guys, and maybe the first third of the season, those guys still hadn't locked into their full potential.
Yeah.
It feels like they're firing on all cylinders before we've even hit preseason games defensively. Like, I think this could be the best defense in the league this year.
I think it's going to be in the mix, and I think we've seen enough. You talk about, you know, room for improvement. We're seeing it. We're seeing a better Kamari Lassiter, Kalen Bullock, clearly better with his ball skills, et cetera. How much better could Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson get pressure in the quarterbacks? Well, that might have something to do with the Texans' offensive line, but they're better. Together. They had, another couple of sacks today that would have been sacks anyway.
And not just are they better, I think that they're going to do things that are more impactful to winning, right? Like, if I wanted to be the dork that I am, I talk about, the win percentage added type stat. Like, I think that they're going to have plays where they have even more impact in that, especially when you look at the idea that their talking points right now are not just, hey, we want to get to the quarterback. We want to get to the quarterback and knock the ball loose in a way that feels like it's above what it has been in the past.